Time now to go to Sunday school with the professor. Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lauren.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helfer.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Doesn't sound like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader. Brought to you by River Island, one of the country's top-selling master plan communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kids' new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Island is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right, well, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning to you, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms and that are out there.
Yeah.
It's their day. It's their day today.
Yeah, you and I have done the show for so many years now. We've hit the Mother's Day, and I was thinking of different things to ask you about Mother's Day, and I was reading some of the comments by some of the players about warming up with their mother, in the backyard, pitching to their mother. Eric Chavez, remember the great third baseman for the A's? A hell of a third baseman, I want to tell you. He could pick it at third base. He really could.
Yeah, no, he could.
And he told me he used to play ball in the backyard with his mother, who I think was an outstanding softball player. So I'll ask you this. Your mother's athletic ability, where did you get the athletic ability?
Well, I would probably lean towards, my mom didn't play sports, so, you know, there might be a lot of athletic ability in there that I haven't seen. I have played ping pong against her before, and she wasn't bad. Probably tennis, you know, she was well built and sleek when she was growing up, and I think that, you know, that would probably have been her sport, but, you know, it was more my dad growing up in the sports. He played ball. All his brothers, you know, he had 10 brothers and sisters from Western PA, and they all played baseball. And they loved all sports, golf, baseball, you name it. And that's probably where it came from. But let's not slight mom, because to get to the major leagues, you probably need both parents with athletic ability in there somewhere just so you have the right genes.
No, absolutely. And I always make my little speech on Mother's Day or Father's Day, because many families don't have the mother at home or the father at home. And it's a significant female person in one's life. And as you know, Allie and Carmen, could be a grandma, could be an aunt, it could be the lady down the street, it could be the godmother.
Yep.
As you know, Lori has been for in your family as well. And we congratulate those people for standing up for young people when they need it.
That's well put. You know, it's more than, you know, we're talking here about athletic ability, but, you know, the support system, somebody that's a mentor, somebody that helps guide you is so much more important than your actual genes, and that's where they come in. I look at my own mom. You know, she was there for everything. Every sporting event, she was there, making food, keeping the family together, that stability. And, you know, moms, there's no one on earth that cared more about children and their kids, and even when they become adults, than the moms.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, does she call you and say, hey, why did you send this guy?
No, she doesn't, because the games are on so late back in Connecticut. So she actually listens on the computer. She likes that. So far, so good. I don't think she's going to get on me.
No, she doesn't say, well, you got to bunt early
say good
in the
decision.
Game.
No.
Does she know the strategy of the game and everything?
A little bit. But she's going to, she's not going to go there with me, I don't believe.
All right. The professor on Mother's Day. Good to see you, of course. Hey, I thought about you in Colorado. Of course, the road trip was like a twilight zone of road trips with all the comebacks and all that. Let's start with Cincinnati and all the runs early, all the home runs. Look, you've been through that ballpark for a number of years. What did you think last weekend?
Well, I've never seen anything like it, to be honest with you. All the home runs in the first inning and just home runs in general. A lot of those balls were struck. They would have been home runs in any ballpark. But, you know, we always talk about Colorado, how the ball carries. You talk about Arizona. But Cincinnati, I think Kurt Young said they call it Great American Small Park. It is a hitter's delight. And, you know, honestly, I believe the balls are much harder this year. The home runs are up. And you see it. You see it with the home runs. You see certain swings that you don't think the ball will carry, and they're carrying out of the ballpark. So with those two things, being in that ballpark and the way it is right now, the balls are going out of the park.
Boy, amazing. Alonzo Powell and I were talking the last couple of days running into him. I said, asked him the question I just asked you. He says, to him, Milwaukee, Miller Park, sure, is the launching pad for him. He said that's the one where the ball just flies out of. It's hard to believe.
No, he's exactly right. Look, like he knows I could have put that park in with the other ones we just named because it's at the top of the list. And that's the way that is, you know, the division. And then you can talk about Wrigley Field when the wind is blowing out. You know, that's a bandbox. So the park does make a difference, you know. And I remember, you know, when we used to play and you had the wind blowing out, or you're in a particular ballpark, you tried to play to the elements. You know, you would try to lift the ball when you had the wind going like that in that ballpark. So I know it's on everybody's mind when they go to those parks, yeah. You know, getting fat, hitting a home run. You want to be able to do it when you can.
What do you think of the bees?
The bees. Well, I'm glad they stayed
remember
away.
We saw that in Colorado, remember?
Yeah, we've seen it several times now with the bees. And I was more worried about Derek Rodriguez because I was sitting next to him, and he said, I'm allergic. I'm out of here. And he took off. And, yeah, my mother-in-law is allergic as well. And you know, that's a scary situation for people that are allergic to bees. I'm glad they delayed the game. I'm glad they delayed the game and let the bees meander away from the ballpark.
How about, well, the one I was thinking of was at Salt River. Remember down the right field line, and we had the delay. And that was the Rockies as well,
right.
I think it was. But Derek Dietrich came out, and, of course, he came out looking like a beekeeper.
Yeah,
he's an interesting, isn't he? He's a big kid, second baseman. He hits the heck out of the ball, and he was the beekeeper. I thought, look, you know, baseball's fun, and he had fun with it.
Yeah, he had fun. Look, it's entertainment. You know, there's a certain amount of entertainment built into the game today with, you know, the Twitter and the Instagram and the posts and the blogs. And to each his own is what my dad used to say, to each his own. He is a very good hitter. He's developed into a real nice hitter. He was a good hitter down there in Miami, but you get him out of Miami and you put him in Cincinnati in that ballpark, as we had just mentioned, and he's going to hit some home runs.
Well, isn't it true? It's funny. We talk with the professor about ballparks. You know, Miami really just stifled everybody. Look at Yelich. Went nuts in Milwaukee, of course. And now that I know more about Milwaukee and professionally what you guys think of it, how about that? Then you take Ozuna. You put him in St. Louis, his shoulder's okay. He's a free agent, too. He's crushing the ball.
Yeah.
And then you get Dietrich, and you put him in Cincinnati, and all of a sudden he's looking like, you know, Roger Maris.
Yeah, and, well, the park does make a difference. And again, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but I think the baseballs are harder, and the ball is carrying much better than it has since I can remember. And in those two combinations, you're going to have more home runs.
Yeah. All right. That's the game today.
Yep.
All right. Then you move on to Colorado, and you're playing in the snow. And, you know, I talked to Watson about this on the show the other day. He said the coldest for him it's ever been, he was at the University of Nebraska, and Jody Mercer was at Oklahoma. He pitched against Oklahoma. And he said it was 25 degrees. He spent every half inning in the bathroom with hand warmers or a little, you know, heating machine or something like this. And that's the coldest he's ever been until this week.
Yeah, well, it was cold. You know, I think the temperature was around 38, but it felt more like 30 with the damp cold. You know, the coldest situations I've been in, my first one was as a player, where we played at the old Rock Pile War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo, New York. And we opened up the season in Buffalo in April, and that was cold. I remember we got snowed out a couple days, and we had a doubleheader. And we played the first game at seven innings, and it must have been 24 degrees out there. And it was so cold, by the time we had to start the second game, about 10 o'clock at night, they canceled the second game, not because of snow, but because of cold. So that is cold. And then, you know, I think back to the snow. My first year managing in San Jose, my first year managing, I think it was 1990, we opened up in Reno. And I had the whole family there. It's my opportunity to manage. And, you know, Lori's there and her family, and they're sitting in the stands. And they were the only people on the silver bleachers because it was snowing out, and it was downright cold. So, and then, of course, Detroit. Detroit, the World Series.
Oh,
that
right.
That cold,
right.
Damp day was when the wind was blowing. That was very cold, you know, and it was kind of unfair. It worked out great because we won the World Series in those conditions. But, you know, when you were starting that World Series game, you're saying, my goodness, biggest game of the year. You know, it's the World Series, and we have to play under these conditions. So nobody likes the cold, that's for sure.
Yeah, I remember Jim Leland in the World Series. I guess when he managed the Marlins back then, was about 97. I think he was the manager of the Marlins because Jack McKeon had him in the second World Series. But it was in Cleveland, and his mother was sitting in the stands, and it was like 30 degrees, and this poor little old lady sitting in the stands, frozen.
Yes.
And I remember that for, yeah, the World Series, it's interesting, the showcase of baseball, how they force it into cold weather times. You can't avoid it sometimes.
Well, yeah.
Just play the game another day.
Well, it's a tough deal, the scheduling. You know, you talk about how difficult it is to make up a major league schedule and have off days for the players and the travel days, and then you have to have makeup days. And now with wild card games, you can make the argument it shouldn't be a one-game playoff. It should be multiple games. I don't know how there's any way around it other than limiting regular season games to have the season end a little bit sooner. And, you know, Zoe was telling me, Alonzo Powell, it might have been Bam Bam, that in Japan they have scheduled makeup days on the schedule. If you get rained out or you have a problem, they actually have some extra days in there that they allot for rescheduled games. And in Major League Baseball, you know, we don't have that many days to do things like that.
It's coming. It's coming.
I think
see
so.
It coming. Hey, yesterday, a special day at the ballpark. It was Let Pablo Pitch Bobblehead Day. And the fans were lined up. Thank Mario Alioto. They gave out 35,000 to everybody, so everyone in the park got one yesterday. But he threw out the first pitch. And I don't know, just from your perspective, you know, Pablo, the bobblehead pitching, I don't know. We'll talk a little bit more about the record he set, but what do you think?
Yeah, well, I got a real soft spot for Pablo. I mean, he came up with us. I remember him as a 16-year-old taking ground balls Arizona. He looked like Pablo. A little smaller version, but he didn't have the beard. Same body type, real athletic kid, quiet, didn't say too much. He really opened up and has become quite a teammate and a spokesman and an energizer. But, look, he's done a lot for this organization. He's been there for the World Series. He's been an outstanding player. You know, a lot of us hated to see him make the move to Boston, but to come back, I think he has a special place in San Francisco and with the fans. And it just adds to it when you have two pitching appearances now, and the ERA gets lower. Oh, I guess it can't get lower when it's zero, but he gets the job done. So very special.
He stole a base, he hit a home run, and he pitched a scoreless inning in a game. The only person in the history of baseball to do that is Christy Mathewson, whose name is up on the ring up here as one of the all-time Hall of Fame greats. Him and Pablo. How about that?
That's something. You know, that really is. I mean, that's a record. It's taken 100 years for someone to do it. So it's as difficult as any record that's out there.
Come on.
It may never happen again. Who
Pablo
knows?
Pablo and Christy Mathewson. Yeah. Who would have seen that coming? So Flan, of course, gets in the middle of this one. You know that. How Pablo got his nickname, the Kung Fu Panda. So Flan tells a story with Jason Stark, who wrote a great article about it in The Athletic, that Flan sends him, and he's going to be out at the plate, and Sandoval jumps over the catcher and does like a karate move or some kung fu move, and Zito says, now you're the Kung Fu Panda. So Flan takes credit for it. If he was out at the plate, there'd never be a Kung Fu Panda.
Well, he should take credit for it. That's that's a good bit. That's a good story. You know, I didn't even remember that, to be honest with you, that that's when we started calling him the Kung Fu Panda. But, Pablo's got a lot of nicknames. There's a lot of spirit there, and he's done a lot of good for the San Francisco Giants himself.
What's your favorite panda moment? And we threw that out yesterday to some people. And they came up with some interesting moments. What's your favorite moment with Sandoval?
It's hard to say off the top of my head. You know, the one thing that that really stands out is the three home runs in the World Series game. You know, getting Verlander, and I think he started off in the first inning, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think he hit one. And such a big moment, and a big moment just not for him, but more so for us and the Giants. So that's what comes to the forefront.
Yeah, a couple of people said it. I bring it up on this Sunday morning of nice images, catching the last out in Kansas City.
Okay.
And for, remember, he caught it and fell down.
He fell down, yeah.
And if that wasn't the emotion of the moment, nothing ever would capture it.
Yeah, no question, no question. A great moment for him. It's always great. You know, I think back to Charlie Hayes, right? Remember, Pablo fell down when Charlie Hayes was with the Yankees, another ex-Giant that played. I played with him in the minor leagues in the Giant system, and he played for here with us with the Giants, and went on to play for the Yankees and caught the last out of a World Series for the New York Yankees. And, you know, those visions are etched in your head. You remember those last outs of World Series. So, yeah, good moment.
Yeah, I thought that was a good one.
Yeah.
People came up with that. I thought we had fun with it. The professor is with us, Ron Wotus. I got into it last night about replay. You know, I call it Saturday Night Live when I'm on, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock like on a Saturday night. I don't know who I'm talking to or where people are or what they're doing on Saturday night, but I let it fly a little bit more. And this whole replay thing, number one, just to bring everyone up to date, Duggar, there's one out, first and second. He tries to steal third. He's called out by Field and Culbreth. On replay, it looks like he's safe. They don't overturn it. A big hullabaloo, changes the inning, blah, blah, blah. Get him on third or less than 2 out. Panic can drive him in and all that stuff. But you had the best view of it last night.
Yeah.
You're the guy who was closest to it. What did you see? And we'll talk about replay.
Yeah, well, you know, the moment was right for him to try to get the third, so we can score without a hit. You know, Panic, he could safety squeeze him in. He could hit a fly ball, ground ball. And, you know, if Solano, the trail runner, you know, Duggar got a little bit of a late break. It wouldn't even have been that close. That's why Solano didn't go. You move two guys into scoring position. Now they have to make a decision. Do they bring the infield in or they give you the run playing back? So, you know, I thought in that moment in time, lefties on two lefties coming up, I thought it was the right advantage that we had to go. And I honestly thought he was safe. Now, in the moment, you know, umpires, they have a tough job. I mean, it's a bang-bang play. I thought he was safe. I thought his foot gets in there. But that's neither here nor there. The issue is when they go to replay, we expect replay to get it right. And I think where we're dropping the ball is they need a conclusive look to say to overturn the ruling on the field, and they call this inconclusive. Well, the problem that we have after dealing with replay and our replay guys and watching it and having to make a determination, do you challenge a call or not, is the best clue you have of that is when the glove moves on the tag. See, if you're looking at a particular angle and you can't see distance between the player's leg in the glove, it may look like he's not tagging him, but they can't be conclusive that he's not tagging. But in our eyes, when that glove actually hits the leg, the glove moves.
Yeah.
And to me, that is the evidence that you need. When the glove moves, that's when he got tagged. Okay. And if they went by that, he would be safe easily. It was 3, 4, 5 clicks of the super slow-mo before the glove actually moved on the tag.
Got it.
But they don't go by that. And that's where the problem lies, and I don't know how they fix it, but we all expect it to be called right if you have video replay. And in our minds, he was safe.
Yeah, that's a good example, good image of what you look for. I got into it last night, and I said, look, football tells you the ball was juggled, he was on the line. They give you an explanation right there. And baseball sort of hides behind the curtain of this replay stuff. Two things. One, they were going to put a replay booth in the ballpark, remember? Mm-hmm. They were going to have one in San Francisco for the West Coast and all that, so it's not 3 in the morning when these guys are looking at it.
Right.
Back in New York, they didn't do that. That was one thing. And two, why not just have the replay in the ballpark? Why not have a spot that's, this is a billion-dollar industry, just have it here and have all the angles and then show the angle that they rely on and say, look, this is what we see. It's like a photo finish in a horse race. This is what we see, And this is why we're going to rule this way and tell everybody.
Right.
Gambling is coming. It's going to be billions of dollars in this industry. And people are going to be relying on, did Duggar get a stolen base? Didn't he get a stolen base? And you can't be hiding behind this. So I think baseball's got to change it. I really do.
Well, those are good points. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. You bring up a couple things that could be looked into. I do think as a fan, you'd like to know why, you know, he's safe. You know, we get a reply that the call stands because it was inconclusive. You know, if it's as simple as that and they let the fans know that, I know that the difficult thing for the umpires and people involved, they know they don't like having it shown on the big screen, the plays, right? Because the whole stadium looks. Now, this goes against your point, right? They don't even want it on the big screen because it gets the fans riled up. And now when you go to, 16 angles and super slow-mo, it's totally different in the replay room than it is on the big screen. But these are things that need to be looked into, and whatever they can do to get it right and have transparency, I think it's going to help the game.
I was just going to say that we are in a transparent world today. Transparency.
Well, we hear that word a lot in other things in our society today. So, you know, everybody wants transparency.
Very good. You're on this, Will. Very good. That's why you're the professor. Very good. The professor speaks college talk this morning. Very good. Very good. Interesting thing came up with Pujols this week. He got his 2,000th RBI, hit a home run. A young man caught the ball and didn't want to give it back. You know, he didn't want to give it to Pujols, and, you know, he's going to keep it, and blah, blah, blah. Pujols said, look, do whatever you want. I don't care. But my thought to you is, you're a professional. You've been around these milestone moments all the time. Have you ever had to negotiate with someone to get a milestone ball back for a player? And what do you think about the guy saying, hey, I'm a fan. The ball came to me. I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, yeah. No, you try to get the baseball. You know, you try to get the baseball. You know, the bullpen's always trying to get the home run balls for their teammates. But I never hit a home run, so I never had to try to get one back. If I did, it would be the first home run, and then I could get that ball back. That would have been a big moment. But, you know, I think, honestly, the game's for the fans. You know, we're professionals, and it's the fans' prerogative, in my opinion, if he wants to give the ball up to the player or not. That's the way I view it. They pay to come watch you play. They pay to get their seat. If the ball's hitting the stands and they catch it, it's up to him. It's his choice what he wants to do with the baseball.
Okay, a good answer, because that's what Pujols eventually said.
He said,
he said, look, if he wants the ball, more power to him. I don't even want it. Let him donate to Cooperstown. I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to get involved in it.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure Cooperstown might, you know, ask him for the ball. And we'll see what happens. It'd be interesting to follow that story and see if he eventually gives the ball up or he keeps it for himself.
Well, he slept on it, and he's a law student, so that'll tell you something about him, right? So he slept on it, and not on the ball, but he slept on the decision.
Right.
And he decided that he would not keep it, and he would offer it back to Pujols.
Very good.
Who said, I don't want it. Just give it to Cooperstown if that's what you want to do.
Well, that's great. I think people, you know, when they have time to think about things, you know, most of the time we do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, and good for him. Good for him for doing that, yeah.
By the way, it got to be a big story this week.
Sure.
It's a big story, which leads us to another big story. Carmen and Allie and I on this podcast we do, Mid-Inning Relief, talked about booing players. Harper was struck out 35 times in April, and the Philly fans, which you know, Philly fans are notorious
for this kind
of stuff, for booing. But I was wondering, you're a pro, you're a coach, you're now visible, you know, on the lines. And other than the manager, I always said the third base coach has the toughest job in the ballpark, because you got to make those decisions in front of 50,000 people, where the manager can hide in the dugout and you never know what he's thinking about. But
right. You
got to do it in front of everybody. But booing. What do you think about fans booing players, and when it may be appropriate? Do you hear it? What do you think about it? Has it changed over the years?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's changed much or not. You know, being on the field my whole life as a professional, You know, you understand that comes with the territory. I mean, these people are paying money to come watch you play, and it's their prerogative how they want to do it. Now, me personally, if I go to another sporting event, I can never boo anybody or yell at somebody or call them a bum. It's just not in my DNA, because probably because I'm on the other side of it. That's their choice. Yeah, you do hear it. You do hear it. And, you know, a lot of times you use that as fuel, you know, to be better. Or, you know, you hear it usually, you hear it on the road, you know, if you're a good player, right? Bonds used to get booed because he was a great player. So people get booed for different reasons. And, you know, I think when you're on the road and the other team's booing you, that just motivates, makes you feel good. But when your home crowd is booing you, that doesn't make you feel good. That makes you feel bad. And, you know, you want to be better. Now, you know, what they boo, are they booing you for performance? Are they booing you for an error? You know, those things being a those things are gonna they're gonna happen. We're not robots. The players are not robots. You know, lack of hustle. I get that. If they feel that a player's not hustling or giving his best and they want to boo, I think that's a commonplace, and it'll probably continue as long as we have professional sports.
Yeah, and baseball more, I guess maybe baseball more than others. I don't know. I haven't gone to enough pro football games, pro basketball games, but booing is sort of in the DNA of baseball.
Yeah, probably because they see them every day. You yeah. watch people play every single day. You know, one game on Sunday for football, you know, yeah. once a week. But, you know, fans come out here and they go to what? They go to 80 games a year or more, you know, people. And they watch the play and they get a feel for the personality and the person. And, you know, maybe they feel like they know the guy and they have a personal relationship with him. And they're more engaged with that. So, you know, it does happen in baseball
yeah.
quite a bit.
Yeah, I think so. All right, a couple other things. We'll take a break. We had a gentleman on yesterday from the store across the street, Baseballism, which, of course, we enjoy the stuff they have. I'm wearing a hat today.
Yeah, it's a nice hat.
Yeah, from Baseballism. But he was a player in the Frontier League. And they had 13 teams, and they made a 14th team. They call them the Frontier Grays. They never had a home game. They never had a home game. I want to talk to you about that. The minor leagues, can you imagine never having a home game?
Okay.
We could talk about that. And we'll talk about a couple of other things right after this.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
Professor Ron Wotus, Mother's Day, what a special day around the ballpark.
My mom was the one that took us to the sporting events. She was always there for us. The meals, made sure your uniform was clean, all those things that go along for the moms. And, you know, she was great. And, you know, the thing that really stands out for me is even now, you know, you think when you're younger, but now, you know, you call mom now, and that's the great thing about moms. They're always there for you. They're, even though they're having a rough time or a bad day, they never let you know it, right? They don't want to upset you. So those are the things I really appreciate about my mom. She hasn't had an easy go in her life, but she would never let you know it and is always there to support you even to this day.
This is Aramis Garcia of the San Francisco Giants. Now back to the Giants pregame show with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680.
All right, nice to have you back with us on this Mother's Day. That is the professor. We just played a little cut that you did last year. Dr. Mother, very nicely done. Mother's Day, very special day around baseball and, of course, around the country today. Well, we had this fellow on yesterday from the Baseballism store across the street, and he played amateur ball in the Frontier League, and they had 13 teams. They needed a 14th team, so they got guys together, and they made him a road team. He never had a home game. And you've managed in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
It's peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, bus rides. You never bat last. You never have a home crowd behind you. How about something like that?
Well, they're missing out on a couple of things. There's no doubt about it. You know, it makes you think of the umpires. It does me, right? They don't have a home. They don't have a home game, right? They're going 162 games. and then into the playoffs and World Series. These guys are always on the road. It's a different existence for them. I think that as a player, I always like being on the road. It didn't bother me. You know, I think a lot of times we say, we've been on the road, can't wait to get home. You do like to get home because you have the comforts of home, you have your home crowd. But if that's never even an option, you deal with it, I guess. You know, it's just the way it is. But it's definitely different.
Yeah, what's the longest bus rides you've taken? Because you played in the minor leagues, obviously, and you had plane rides from Hawaii back to the mainland.
Yeah.
But what about bus rides?
Yeah. Well, in the Texas League, you know, you go from Shreveport to El Paso. I can't remember if that's 12 or 16 hours,
wow.
You know. The Eastern League had some tough ones as well. I don't remember the exact hours on the bus, but you just dealt with it. Honestly, the flights from Hawaii to the mainland were just as hard as any bus ride because you're flying and then you had to stop. You leave Hawaii at, there's a curfew. No one can start after 10 p.m. And then you get take the midnight flight out of Hawaii. And then you'd have to stop in San Francisco or L.A. before you continued on to Edmonton or Albuquerque, wherever you were going. So, you know, you wouldn't get the restful sleep that you can get on a bus if you're just going for 12 hours because you got to get up, you got to move off the bus, you got to go through the airport, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, the travel can be tough in the minor leagues.
Peanut butter and jelly, is that
good? Well, you know, I still see guys eating it today. I don't know if they're just so used to being in the minor leagues, but a lot of guys still, I call it the Texas League steak sandwich, peanut butter and jelly.
All right, very good. All right, Carmen is here. Carmen, a question for this morning?
Yeah.
Whoops,
I didn't turn on my mic.
There
hey.
Sorry.
All right. I was just wondering if there was a stat that you look at, and maybe it's several stats, when you're looking to evaluate what kind of hitter somebody is.
Yeah, you know, having managed in the minor leagues, you know, we didn't have all this information. And the 8 years that I did it, the simple stats that we got were really my go-to to evaluate the opposition and how I can manage the game to win or get the most out of my players or what this other pitcher or hitter is going to do, what type of player he is. So for me, it wasn't, you know, OPS and all that. That doesn't help me in the moment manage the game. I look at walks to strikeouts. I look at their RBIs. That tells me a lot about the type of hitter he is. You know, is he a swing and miss guy? Is he going to put the ball in play with a man on third, you know, less than two outs? Is he a possible hit and run player? And the RBIs tells me this guy, you know, usually is clutch. He hits with men in scoring position or he has a knack for driving in runs. He's the guy that you don't want to beat you. So those are the stats I still look at today. There's other stats that you look at, but I still go to that for the hitters and I go to it for the pitchers as well. Because it tells me, you know, what kind of stuff the pitcher has and how we may need to attack him.
Well, interesting answer because Malley, eight walks, 41 strikeouts. Bumgarner, like eight walks, 45 strikeouts. So both of these guys today, good walk to strikeout ratios.
Yeah, they're good pitchers, obviously. That shows good stuff. They can strike you out. You don't want to get behind, right? You don't want to leave it up to the pitcher, get two strikes on you. Now he gets to make his pitcher's pitch. You're probably going to be gone. So, you know, be ready to swing the bat and, you know, be ready for your pitch in your zone and let it go.
Well, I'm going to say this to Welcome, and then you can follow up. Yeah, that was very astute what you just said because Malley, he gets you 0-2. 1 for 18. And Bumgarner 0-2, 2 for 24. And both of them, if you hit the first pitch, Malley 6 for 16 with two homers, and Bumgarner 11 for 27 without a home run. So you got to get them early in the count. If they get you 0-2, just as you said, and that's a very good observation, the walk to strikeout guys, if they get you down in the count, goodbye.
Yeah, those are things that you know as a player when you play it. If I face a guy with good stuff, I didn't want to get behind in the count. You know, I got to get my swings in. So, you know, you don't want to chase out of the zone. And again, with two strikes, you know, you got to expand the zone. You don't want to take a called third strike. And the pitcher, when he's 0-2 or 1-2, you know, even Ted Williams and Tony Gwynn and all the great hitters in the game, they weren't as good a hitter behind in a count.
Yeah.
So there's you don't really look at hard hit ball percentage and that kind of stuff. Because I was telling, when we were talking about this on the podcast, I was saying a lot of the most standard stats are kind of what's happening. And then when you kind of dive deeper, it's the why, meaning like if he's hitting balls hard, maybe he's just running into some tough luck, stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, we do for certain things when you're looking for the matchup, like who do you want to play today? If you just look at a small sample and you say, oh, this guy is 2 for 8 mm-hmm. off this pitcher, and we have somebody else that's 4 for 6, we'll play the guy that's 4 for 6. Not necessarily. We'll go to video and look at the at-bats. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're between two different players, now you watch the at-bats, and that'll show up. Wow, he had good at-bats. He hit the ball hard 4 times, right? At somebody. So you don't always have that kind of time to delve into statistics that heavily, because you can spend 5 hours every night preparing for one game, but it depends mm-hmm. what statistics you're looking at, overall statistics or, you know, who you're deciding to play that day. I think we take it deeper, and I know the sabermetric community does. It's just not the hits, you know, two at-bats. It's your swing plane. How do you match up with the pitcher? And that is also a better way to look at it. And you can almost accomplish the same thing watching video and looking at the at-bats of the player against the guy if you have that kind of time.
Well, essentially, you're looking at the sabermetric number, but you're looking at it and how it is created. And that's the point. So the numbers work, but you also can see it.
Yeah, that's where video is great. You know, I think the video becomes more important even with, you know, plotting the defense. You can look at plots on where a guy hit the ball, but if you don't look at the swings and see what the hitter's trying to do in the moment, I think you don't see the complete picture. You know, this guy Iglesias over here, he'll hit the ball to right field in a New York minute, but he also pulls the ball. So, you know, those things you need as a coach to know if they're going to hit and run, who's going to cover the base on a fastball away opposed to a slider, you know, or a soft pitch in the zone. So it gets a lot deeper than just the statistics, no question.
You know, it's funny you said that about Iglesias, because I was watching last night, he fouled about 4 or 5 in a row off on the outside part of the plate.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, he's just going to punch one into right field.
Yeah.
Eventually. I forgot how the bat ended, but it made me think about that and watching him last night.
Well, that's why you have to be in the moment. He's turned himself into a pretty good hitter. We saw him in Detroit, and he's a tough little out now. He's tough to defend because he will pull the ball, and he has the ability to go the other way, which not a lot of hitters today are doing, you know. Yeah. They're shifting on him, and these hitters that hit the ball the majority of the time in one area, and there's not as many hits out there. So he's turned himself into a pretty good hitter.
Marty Brenneman said that he's the best shortstop, even better than Concepcion. And Marty Brenneman, you know, 45
wow.
years doing Reds baseball. That's how good he said that kid is at short.
Wow, that's high praise, no doubt about it.
I'll leave you with this one. We always, you know, dive deeply into baseball history. Ray Yu of the Dodgers has got the 2 walks and 45 strikeouts. So the ratio is 22.5 to 1 of strikeouts to walks. It's the best ratio since Candy Cummings. 1875, the guy who invented the curveball.
Is that who he is? Because I didn't know who he was.
How about that? So I'll leave you with that one today, Candy Cummings.
That's Candy Cummings. I'll remember that name, and that's going way back, Marty,
right?
So well done.
Invented the curveball.
Invented the curveball.
And Ray Yu has surpassed Candy Cummings, believe
well,
it or not.
We have Kung Fu Panda's name being invented here on the show, and now we know who invented the curveball. Right. So great job.
All right, have a great afternoon, and I'll see you next weekend. I'll be down in Arizona. I'm going to do the show some there next weekend, so maybe we'll get you up there
next
weekend.
Sounds good.
All right, that is the Professor Ron Wotus. More coming up, KNBR 680, the sports leader.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680, the sports leader.